You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
You're listening to Muses.
That's right.
Part of the Pantheon podcast.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We should mention that we're both sitting here in the most summeriest of clothes. Mm-hmm. We were both wearing really nice dresses.
Yes, we were.
Really pretty dresses. But we're actually going out somewhere very special tonight.
Yeah, we are.
We should talk about it.
Well, we're going to get to see little Steven perform. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Maureen Van Zandt, his wife, who we interviewed. And if you haven't listened to that, go back. Great interview. Maureen's amazing. And I'm just so excited that Steven's here. And he's playing the Danforth, which is my second home. So that's going to be fun.
So we'll head there. We'll go to the box office. We'll pick up some tickets. We'll pick up our passes. And then we get to meet little Steven before the show.
Yeah, we do.
So that's super fun. That's always nice to be able to do that and then enjoy a show with a little pass lanyard around your neck.
Yeah, this will be fun.
So anyways, we've been recording a few Patreon things here and doing some work, and we want the best sound quality possible. So we've got the door closed, no fans on, so we're both sweating through our dresses.
Yeah, it's a little sticky out there. Yeah. I think it feels like 38 today.
Oh, yeah, because we have American, primarily American listeners, so I don't know what 30 degrees Celsius is in Fahrenheit. But we got on some sort of old dresses, and so now we're just sitting around.
It's 100.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty sweaty out there.
No, we're not here, complaining. I mean, no. I cried all through this winter, so I'm
exactly.
not complaining.
Oh, yeah. No complaints.
About how hot it is.
But I would think much it's just rather. Cute. Yes. I would much rather this than dead of winter. So, I'm enjoying every minute. Went swimming yesterday. I'm trying to check out every swimming pool in Toronto. That's like my goal for the summer.
That is a wonderful goal.
Yeah.
Now, you celebrated a birthday recently. Because our shows are coming out bi-weekly and sometimes we record a couple in a day, not usually more than that, it might be a little bit past your birthday, but for us, it's just recently happened. So happy birthday, and how did you celebrate?
I went with some of my Danforth buddies. We went to see the Blue Jays play. I'd never been to a baseball game before, so it just seemed like something fun. And one of my friends, Caroline, she's from Scotland, and she's also never been to a baseball game. Baseball doesn't really exist out there, so it was a first for both of us. Found out that the Blue Jays kind of suck, But
that's why tickets are so cheap.
Yeah, yeah. Music. It was still fun, and it was like a Jersey day, and we all got a free Blue Jay jersey, which is
culture.
Like extra, extra large. So I gave it to my pops.
Technology.
And, he was happy with
and
it.
And rock and roll.
He's a huge baseball fan, actually. Like, the number 11 was on the back, and he was like, like, he knew exactly, like, what player it was and everything. So, yeah.
That's cute.
He was happy, and then we just, yeah, hung out, and I got a new bike for my birthday.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
What a beautiful gift.
Got to go biking all around the city, and that was, like, so much fun. And it is, it's been about a decade since I'd been on a bike, and it is, like, there's a reason that saying, you know, just, like, riding a bike, you know, you get back on it. Like, within 10 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I got this.
And I can do this.
Yeah.
Yes, fantastic.
I had like a little like Bambi moment when I first got on it, but that sorted itself out in like a minute. So,
well, that's a nice segue into Sheena.
Yeah,
because I bought a bike off of Sheena a few summers ago, and it was stolen within days. Yeah, because I was like, I can't find my good quality U-lock, and I lived on a very busy street in Toronto, mm-hmm. and so I was like, I'll find it tomorrow, and honestly, within a couple of days, with just a regular chain, it had been cut and stolen. I'm so sorry, Sheena, but also, speaking of you, thank you and we love you for becoming one of our newest patrons.
Yeah.
I believe they are a patron. Trin?
Oh, sorry.
Right?
Yeah,
I think
they are.
Oh, yeah, they're a patron for the Patreon. So thank you to our newest subscriber, Sheena. We love you. We also gave you a thank you in the newest Patreon episode, but we also have to let everybody know that you're amazing. We appreciate you. And if anybody else is curious about some bonus content, head over to patreon.com/musespodcast.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Sheena.
Yeah. So do I look more tan? Have you noticed?
You do, actually.
Look at my 100%. Back.
I was looking at your face when you were sitting next to me, and I could really see it. Yeah. How was your trip?
It was beautiful. I went to Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island, mm-hmm. and I went swimming in the ocean, and I jumped in, and I felt that salt water in my mouth, which is quite a difference because you can't really swim anywhere in Toronto that's not a pool.
Yeah.
They have the signs everywhere being like, not safe.
Don't go in
Don't
here.
Do it.
Yeah.
So I prefer, you know, a body of water like that. And I walked around Halifax, and I can hardly walk today.
Oh, yeah.
My buns are so sore from walking up and down those hills. I walked across the Citadel, and there's so many hills in Halifax, and I caught shin splints.
What?
So I could hardly walk through the airport yesterday. TJ was like, we got to catch the train in 10 minutes. And I'm just like, rah.
Oh,
but
man.
Anyways, all good. Beautiful trip, and happy to be back here to get some work done.
Yeah. So speaking of, I'm presenting this week's episode, and this is a little different, and I've been excited about this one. I'm going to talk about all of the people that are mentioned in Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side.
Doot, 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 doot.
Exactly. So just a little information on the song itself. It was released in November 8, 1972, and it was on Lou Reed's incredible album, Transformer. I love that album. And this song was actually produced by David Bowie and Mick Ronson.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, obviously, talking about five different people, I'm not going to be giving as in-depth a biography on all of them as I normally would if it were just dedicated to one person. But I'll tell everyone, you know, where to look elsewhere if you want a more in-depth look. All these people are so incredible and definitely deserve it. So the song itself came about because Andy Warhol went to Lou, as he did quite a lot, and was like, you know, you should write a song about the people in the factory. And he wrote a couple songs about people in that world. This one is about some pretty unique ones. So I'm going to read the verse to get an idea of who we're talking about here, and then I'll talk about the people. So in the song, it starts saying, Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across the USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. So Hollywood Lawn was originally born Geraldo Santiago Franceschi Rodriguez Dankel. That's quite a name.
Quite a mouthful.
Yeah. On October 26, 1946, in Puerto Rico. But as the song says, Holly actually grew up in Miami. When Holly was six, her family moved there. And from what I've read, Holly knew very on that she was different. And she knew Miami wasn't exactly the place where she was going to, you know, evolve and shine and become who she was meant to be.
Probably not.
Yeah. In an interview with The Guardian, Holly had said, I was 15 years old and failing at high school in Miami Beach because I was too busy partying. I was supposed to go to summer school to catch up and really didn't want to, so I joined some of these Cuban queens to go to New York. I hawked some jewelry and we made it all the way to Georgia where the money ran out and we had to hitchhike the rest of the way. Atlanta, Georgia, of all places. You could expect to be tarred and feathered and murdered in those days. But we survived, and I remember the first time I saw New York, the Emerald City. I thought the sidewalks were made of diamonds because of the specks of mica in the asphalt. It was 1962. Marilyn had just died. I lived on the streets like everyone does when they run away. I met some girlfriends who took me in, and we found a place in Queens. I was really lucky. I met this guy who fell in love with me and asked me to be his girlfriend. I started taking hormones for a sex change and lived as his wife, working in the days as a clothing model at Saks Fifth Avenue. Oh, the things I did. And for 6 or 7 years, they never knew I was a boy. Not a clue.
Amazing.
So, yeah, right? So Holly changed her name from Geraldo to Holly after her favorite character, Holly Golightly, from Breakfast at Tiffany's. I almost said the Breakfast Club there. I was like, nope, wrong breakfast. So Holly, along with many of the other people I'm going to be talking about, like Candy and Jackie, they were all obsessed with old Hollywood stars, which I also am. And you can see that in a lot of the photographs of them during that time. They would all be able to kind of quote the lines from the old films. They really admired people like Greta Garbo, like Dietrich, Clara Bow, you know, all those incredible women who had their own very unique look to them and everything. And they really took that look and that vibe from old Hollywood and brought it into the 60s underground culture. And that was, you know, something that no one had seen before as well, like in the 60s. So Holly actually never had a complete sex change, though she lived as Holly, of course, for the rest of her life. She was Holly. It wasn't until 1969 that she became a Warhol factory regular. She says, I was very happy when I gradually became a Warhol superstar. I felt like Elizabeth Taylor. Little did I realize that not only would there be no money, but that your star would flicker for 2 seconds and that was it. But it was worth it. The drugs, the parties, it was fabulous. You live in a hovel, walk up 5 flights, scraping for rent. Then at night, you go to Max's Kansas City, where Mick Jagger and Fellini and everyone is there in the back room. And when you walk in that room, you were a star. So Holly did 2 major films that were produced by Warhol. One was called Trash and the other Women in Revolt. Both of which also starred Candy, Joe, and Jackie, who I will be talking about in this episode.
So this is all super fascinating. And when Holly is speaking about herself, we're in the 60s still?
Those quotes were from an interview later in life.
Okay. So here's and here's the thing. And this is, I love that you've taken on this as an episode. I think that it's super fascinating and very important. And because I listen all the time, like, you know, Dan Savage, and we want to be really like concise about you know, proper gendering and using the right terms and whatnot. It was Holly who was using the term sex change, correct?
Yeah.
But you're going to be referring to as, and it's the quotes that Holly is using, and then we're using those terms, but things like sex change are now called gender confirmation surgery. Mm-hmm. So if we get a term wrong, we're just going to say that we're trying our best.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the stuff is taken from those quotes back then. And of course, if there's any constructive feedback that we can know too, that's always good to be open
yes,
to.
And
it's such a sensitive subject.
For sure. So Holly did a lot of off-Broadway work as well as nightclub acts. And she actually did one with Jackie Curtis, which, again, I'll tell you all about Jackie. Jackie's amazing. In 1982, Holly worked as a coach, actually, to Dustin Hoffman for Tootsie. Mm. And, you know, taught him how to tap into that feminine side. So Holly ended up moving in the early 90s to Hollywood. And she stayed there until she passed away. And that was when she was 69 years old on December 6, 2015. And unfortunately, she passed away from cancer. In 1992, she actually published a memoir called A Low Life in High Heels. Mm-hmm. Fabulous title. Unfortunately, it's out of print and incredibly expensive. I tried to find it, and it was like thousands of dollars on
thousands.
Amazon. Thousands. Yeah. So wow. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm always on the hunt. If you've read it, if you have a copy out there, tell me about it. I would love to learn more about Holly. Penny Arcade, another fabulous woman from that era who is an incredible artist herself, and she was really good friends with all of these people. She gave a quote that I really loved about Holly, which was, "Holly gave visibility long before it was comfortable to do so, and also gave thousands of people both hope and pleasure."
Oh.
Yeah. So that's a little about Holly. Plenty more out there if you want to look her up.
Support for today's show comes from HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get easy, seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy.
When it comes to cooking, you can say that I'm a beginner, but HelloFresh makes me feel like a pro. They make cooking delicious meals at home a reality regardless of your comfort in the kitchen. With step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients, you'll have everything you need to get a wow-worthy dinner on the table in just 30 minutes.
The selection is truly great. There's really something for everyone, from family recipes to calorie smart or vegetarian, and fun menu series like Hall of Fame and Kraft Burgers. HelloFresh has more five-star recipes than any other meal kit, so you know you'll get something delicious.
Yes. HelloFresh is also flexible to fit all lifestyles. You can add extra meals to your weekly order, as well as yummy sides like garlic bread and cookie dough. You can also easily change your delivery days, food preferences, and skip a week whenever you need.
I've been thinking about trying HelloFresh for a while, and I'm seriously glad that I did. I'm not even kidding. It was absolutely delicious. I was really, really impressed. I had the pan-seared steak, and it is honestly some of the best steak that I've ever had.
Wow.
I had to eat it on my own because TJ's not here, so I was sending him photos, and I said, I wish you were here. This was so good, and
he must have been so jealous.
We are going to eat some of this when he gets back. Like, I am in. I also tried the Mushu pork tacos.
Yeah.
And honestly, pork and cabbage, sesame oil is my favorite combination. And I'm really looking forward to trying the crispy chicken parmigiana.
Well, as a vegetarian, I find it's not always easy to mix things up, but HelloFresh really did give me great variety. This week, I've impressed some friends by cooking their one-pot Mexican quinoa and black bean recipe, and I made myself the most delicious grilled halloumi burger with rosemary potato wedges. Mmm, it was so good. Really looking forward to trying their miso tofu stir-fry recipe tonight.
So, are you feeling hungry yet, listeners? HelloFresh has an amazing offer for you. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/Muses80 and enter Muses80.
Yeah, that's like receiving 8 free meals.
Again, For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/Muses80 and enter Muses80, M-U-S-E-S, 80. And guess what, Canadian listeners? They deliver to us too.
Yes.
Now I'm going to talk about probably the most well-known of all of them, Candy Darling. So her verse...
I've definitely heard that name before.
Her verse in the song goes, "Candy came from out on the island. In the back room, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side."
I'm pumping my fist in the air because I'm so excited about that.
So, Candy Darling was born James Lawrence Slattery on November 24th, 1944, in Queens. And she grew up on Long Island. Her parents divorced when she was very young, and she was raised by her mother. Her father was very abusive, and Candy, like so many other muses and stars we learn of, had quite a difficult time growing up. In Candy's journals, she wrote, "I've lived most of my life starving for affection, both spiritual and emotional hunger. I lived through movie stars. Most of my teen and preteen years were spent very lonely, looking at movie magazines. I was in love with Lawrence Harvey. Every day I'd watch the $1 million movie and long for him. Nobody loves me or wants me. I lead a dull and uninteresting existence. I'm in homeroom now, and there's a bunch of chicks in here, and they all hate me. Someday, I'll be a movie star. That's it. I'll be rich and famous and have all the friends I want."
Oh, my heart.
Right? As far as the female stars went, Kim Novak was the ultimate woman to Candy. She really admired her blonde white hair and her strength on screen and really dreamed of being a movie star like her. And she would like rehearse scenes that Kim Novak did in, you know, some of her films, and she just had them down. Candy actually even wrote to Kim, and she got a letter back and a photograph, you know, with her autograph on it and everything. So yeah, Kim Novak made a deep impression on her. And Candy, like so many other muses and stars we learn about, you know, was kind of a loner growing up and had a difficult time in school. She was relentlessly bullied until she dropped out at 16. After apparently, and this just blew my mind, some of her male schoolmates threatened to lynch her.
No.
It's so awful, like, what people do to each other. Like, I can't even imagine. I'm so glad she got out of there and still was who she was, you know?
One of my best friends in high school, so I don't know if I've talked about this, or I think maybe to you, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast. It's possible that I have, but I had such a difficult time in high school because I grew up just lower middle class, I guess you would call it. I'm not even really sure, but just really like simple means. Like we didn't have too much extra. We had what we needed, but not too much extra.
Yeah.
We didn't take vacations, whatnot. But I left my hometown to go to a high school that was about 45 minutes out of town. And I didn't realize that it was like the academic slash sports high school. And all of the students came from very well-to-do families. So they had the mansions in the city. And I'm talking mansions.
Yeah.
And so doctors and lawyers' kids and whatnot. And a friend of mine at the time was overweight. And one of the guys threatened to kill her with a gun. Oops. That was a thing that happened to my best friend. And
that is horrific.
She, yeah. I am happy to say that she is kicking the most ass out of anybody I know.
Yeah.
In the whole world. And she could literally be anywhere in the world right now. Like, you name a place and it's possible that she's there right now. That's
good for her.
Yeah. And she's, you know, like super into extreme sports and yoga, and she's
the funniest
and most beautiful person I've ever met. And
wow. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing too. Like, if you're in a bad situation, there is life after that, you know.
High school, man.
Right? It's brutal.
Can't
for
pay
everyone.
Me to go back there.
So in 1961, Candy took a course in cosmetology, and that's sort of when she began finding her feminine side, dressing in women's clothing, practicing makeup. She ended up being outed to her mother by a neighbor who told her that Candy had been going to gay bars and that she had been seen, you know, in drag. Her mother confronted her about it, and Candy told her, like, yes, I'm gay. And she actually made her mother sit down. She left the room, went back in, transformed from Jimmy to Candy, right? And there's a beautiful quote. His mother later said, I knew then I couldn't stop Jimmy. Candy was just too beautiful and talented.
Oh, good, Mama. Right? Good for you.
So that's when Candy began going to Manhattan more and more, hanging out in Greenwich Village, meeting like-minded people. It's around then that Candy met Jackie Curtis. And this was when Candy was still going as James. So Curtis really took Candy under his wing, and they were very, like, super, super close. In 1966, Candy met a man named Jeremiah Newton, and they became very close. They were roommates. Candy actually lived with Jeremiah until she passed away, but we're not quite there yet. Before Candy was Candy, before she found her name, Candy Darling, she was, for a few, you know, months, known as Hope Slattery.
Don't love that one as much, but okay.
Holly Woodlawn has actually said that Candy tried out several other names, Hope Doll, Candy Cane, until finally she found Candy Darling. Candy's entrance into Andy Warhol's world happened when Warhol attended a play that Jackie Curtis had written and directed called Glamour, Glory, and Gold. So Glamour, Glory, and Gold, one of Jackie's plays, a little fun fact on that, it was actually Robert De Niro's first acting gig as well.
Oh, that's like when he was a cute.
A little baby.
He was cute.
He was so cute. And yeah, Candy was in that and a whole bunch of other people. And Jackie had actually invited Andy Warhol to come to the play. So that was sort of their introduction to the factory world. Warhol, of course, saw what a star Candy was and how talented all of them were. And Warhol cast Candy in a short scene in Flesh, which would also star Jackie Curtis and Joe D'Alessandro, and all of them in Women in Revolt.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
So the premise is of Women in Revolt. is that Holly and Jackie form a small group of women libbers, and they convince Candy, who plays this wealthy socialite, to join them. So this is when Candy first gets like a real taste of fame. People are starting to notice her, not just the Manhattan crowd, but, you know, people all over. Like, who is this gorgeous creature?
I can't wait to see photos of all these beautiful women.
Candy was incredible. Like, I can't even imagine, like, in photos she looks amazing. I imagine in person she must have been like all the more magnetic. Also, another big admirer of Candy's, and this you'll love this, was Tennessee Williams.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Well, not funny, but we were just talking about Tennessee Williams in our Patreon episode.
So he saw Candy's talent, and he actually cast her in his off-Broadway production of his play Small Craft Warnings.
Oh, we haven't read that one.
Yeah. Candy plays a character named Violet, who is described, not by me, as a trampy character that all the men lust after.
Okay, I have a funny story for you. So when my grandmother was alive, my grandmother's not been with us for maybe 10 years now, and she lived to be 88. Mm-hmm. And my cousins and my uncle got her a cat, and this cat had been kind of a rescue from the neighborhood, and they were like, "Nanny, what do you want to name her?" And she was like, "Tramp." Because, you know, with like Lady and the Tramp, you know, like that kind of meant something a little bit different. And they were like, "How about we call her Bella?"
Amazing. I'm pretty sure Candy loved being called a tramp in that, though.
But I think being called a tramp,
Being called a tramp.
I don't know. For sure, same thing. But
they're different. And it's interesting. That's interesting, too, because, like, if you call a man a tramp, you're thinking, like a homeless person.
Lady is a tramp.
Yeah. And then if it's a woman, you're thinking, like, that she's
wild on the streets.
Yes, exactly.
And that could mean many things.
Yeah.
And not mean other things.
Candy.
Moving on.
Yeah. Candy was also in some other plays that... after that, but things were also getting rough. Just like Edie Sedgwick's story, Warhol, you know, uses people, and he used Candy and kind of spat her out as well. She thought she was going to be his right-hand woman, you know, that together they would make a ton of films. Like, he would be there, you know, helping her rise to fame and, you know, making money and everything. But after Flesh and Women in Revolt, Warhol moved on. He didn't put her in his next film, and he didn't even invite her to the premiere of it, which definitely hurt her. And this kind of led to some pretty dark days in Candy's life. Just like all the others, she found it very difficult to make that jump to mainstream films, which is what she truly wanted. She wanted to be a star. She wanted to act in films. And there's a sad quote from Candy. She said, "I feel like I'm living in a prison. There are so many things I may not experience. I cannot go swimming, can't visit relatives, can't get a job, can't have a boyfriend. I see so much of life I cannot have. I'm living in a veritable prison." So things were actually getting much worse for her as well, because her health began to take a turn for the worst. She never had
gender confirmation surgery.
But obviously that was something that she was considering, and she had been taking these Swedish hormone pills, and after a few years on these pills, she discovered she had cancer.
Aww.
And that cancer was most likely brought on by those pills, by the hormones, and those pills were taken off the market like later. So Candy actually passed away when she was only 29 years old.
Oh, that's devastating.
Yeah. On March 21st, 1974, she was so young. There's actually a photo of Candy in the hospital, basically on her deathbed, but she's all dolled up. She actually asked the photographer to come and take, like, she wanted that photo. And she looks unbelievably gorgeous, like you would never know, but that was sort of it for her. And she actually wrote a letter. She wrote, "To whom it may concern, by the time you read this, I will be gone. Unfortunately, before my death, I had no desire left for life. Even with all my friends and my career on the upswing, I felt too empty to go on in this unreal existence. I am just so bored by everything. You might say I'm bored to death. It may sound ridiculous, but it's true. I have arranged my own funeral arrangements and a guest list, and it is paid for. I would like to say goodbye to Jackie Curtis. I think you're fabulous. Holly, Sam Green, a true friend and noble person. Ron Link, I'll never forget you. Andy Warhol, what can I say?
Oh.
Paul Morrissey, Lenny, you know I loved you. Andy, you too. Jeremiah, don't take it too badly. Just remember what a bitch I was. Geraldine, I guess you saw it coming. Richard Turley and Richard Galoob, I know I could have been a star, but I decided I didn't want it. Manuel, I'm better off now. Terry, I love you. Susan, I'm sorry. Did you know I couldn't last? I always knew it. I wish I could meet you all again. Goodbye for now. Love always, Candy Darling." Wow. So Lou Reed also wrote another song about Candy called Candy Says. In 2010, they made a documentary, a beautiful documentary called Beautiful Darling. And that's all about Candy, and it's lovely. I highly recommend it. A lot of her friends are in it and tell great stories. They read pieces from her diary. You get a lot of clips of Candy just being Candy, you know, rehearsing her, you know, old Hollywood scenes. And she's just magnificent on screen. I also read a book called Candy Darling, Memoirs of an Andy Warhol Superstar. I recommend that for those who want a deeper, you know, personal look into Candy's life and feelings.
Who, like, but she didn't write it.
Well, it was from her journals.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It can be memoirs if it's a journal. Got it. Yeah. Okay.
And that's interesting because, like, there's, like, recipes in it that she collected, just, like, musings. There's letters she wrote to people. It's a little collection of all things Candy. And I thought I'd end her piece with a quote from her that I really love. "I will not cease to be myself for foolish people make harsh judgments on me. You must always be yourself, no matter what the price. It is the highest form of morality." Yeah.
Okay. And now a break in our show to tell you about ForHers.com. ForHers.com is a new women's wellness brand putting your body back in your control.
Fought for by a woman, for women. For Hers is helping women across the country get convenient and affordable access to birth control.
No need to take travel time out of your already busy day. For Hers provides access to licensed doctors online who can evaluate you and, if appropriate, prescribe you birth control that can be delivered direct to your door. Now, for me living in Toronto, my doctor is at the other end of the city, and it takes me a good 45 minutes to an hour to get there. Same thing on the way back, depending on the bus. So honestly, getting there sometimes can take up half your day, a full day.
Yeah, this is so convenient. And everyone's body is different. So For Hers offers 10 well-known birth control options as well.
Whether you're already taking birth control or have no idea where to start, For Hers will connect you to a doctor online who can help determine the option that will work best for you.
So fantastic. Order now. Our listeners can get their first month off birth control from ForHers.com for just $5 right now while supplies last. And of course, subject to doctor approval. See their full website for details.
Go to forhers.com/muses.
That's forhers.com/muses. M-U-S-E-S.
Restrictions apply. See website for full details and safety information.
So this next one, "Little Joe never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here, a hustle there. New York City was the place where they said, 'Hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side.'"
Wow, okay, I'm in it.
So Little Joe refers to the beautiful Joe D'Alessandro. Joe was born December 31st in 1948 in Pensacola, Florida. His dad was in the Navy. His mother was only 6 years old when Joe was born.
So how long?
Sorry, 16, oh my God.
I'm like, I said how long. I meant, what the fuck? I meant how old? Because I wasn't sure if you said 6 or 60, and either of those were a little off.
16 years old.
And I'm like, better? I don't know. Okay.
Better than 6, that's for sure. So when Joe was 5, his mother was charged with interstate auto theft and went away to serve 5 years in prison.
His mother?
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
So Joe and his brother ended up moving to New York to live with their father, but both were eventually placed in foster care. So until Joe was about 14, him and his brother moved to Queens and then lived with their parental grandparents. And I think their father was like kind of in and out. So it's not surprising by the time that Joe was in his early teens, he began acting out, getting into fights. He was expelled from school at 15 for punching the school principal. From there,
gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. From there, he got into gangs and petty crimes. He began to steal cars. When Joe was about 15 or 16, he ended up getting in a car accident. He stole a car. He smashed it up. The police stopped him, and Joe actually ended up getting shot in the leg by a police officer who mistakenly thought that he was armed with a gun.
Quote, unquote, mistakenly.
Yeah. So Joe actually got away, but he was later arrested because his dad took him to the hospital for the gunshot wound. And, you know, you kind of have to explain gunshot wounds. Mm. Since he was a minor, he was sentenced to a camp rehabilitation center in the Catskills. But within the year, he ran away from the camp and began to support himself by doing nude modeling in some short films and magazines, including Bob Meiser's Athletic Model Guild. Bob Meiser is very famous for his work, which really pushed the boundaries in regards to homoerotic content in that era.
Have you ever modeled nude?
No, but I've always kind of wanted to, because mm-hmm. you only got this body once.
Yeah.
I know you have.
Actually, twice, now that I think about it. Maybe more than that if you can... Okay, so three, kind of. Once was when, well, four? Okay. We'll just talk about two times. Once when, my art school boyfriend, like, painted me nude. Mm-hmm. And then once when I posed for the Goddess Array. So one is a painting and one is a photo. So I have posed nude. Actually, TJ was in an art show where I think they were supposed to be nude, but something happened. And so they just had to have like short shorts. And so there are these photos of him in university. And he's like tall, you know, Alexander Skarsgård mm-hmm. from like... Big Little Lies.
Oh, I know. And
like, you know, like that body type for me is like, I'm humping the air. Do you know what I mean? That's like, I love that body type. And so he's so tall and thin and he's like a little bit younger. And there's this picture of him in arts and like in his art school with these little tiny shorts on and so sexy. I've had one drink and I'm like, I'm feeling it.
Aww. Well, back to Joe.
I forgot his parents listen.
Amazing. So it would be 2 years later in 1967 when Joe met Andy Warhol and Paul Morrissey for the first time. If you're unfamiliar with who Paul Morrissey is, he was really the main man behind all the big Warhol films. He was the writer, director, cinematographer. Andy really just produced them. He didn't really have much a role in the creation. So, yeah, you're watching like Paul Morrissey films, not Andy Warhol in the later years, you know, when storylines actually began to form in his films. So the story of Joe meeting Andy and Paul is hilarious, and I'll use his own words to tell it. Joe said, "This guy was famous for his Campbell's soup, and I wanted to go down there and just get a bowl of soup. I loved that soup. They told me this guy was shooting a movie down there. When I got down there and watched what they were doing, I thought it was a home movie. This was not a real movie. It looked like a home movie to me. And they didn't have any soup, the bastards." When they asked me to do a small role in one of the films, I said, "Sure, I'll do it." That was a 24-hour movie that Andy was shooting, but it was cut down to a shorter film before they released it. It was shown only once in its entirety. When they cut it down, it was called The Loves of Ondine, and that was my first movie with the Warhol people. When Paul approached me at the end of the shoot, he said, "I'm going to need you to sign a release." I started laughing. I said, "For what? You're not going to release this movie. It's just for you guys." He said, "No, this is a real movie." I just laughed and signed the release because I couldn't believe it. I told them I'd keep an eye out for him. I turned out to be wrong about it all, but the soup I got burned on. So yeah, Joe had no idea Andy Warhol was this artist. He just knew that he was somehow connected to Campbell's Soup in some way. So he ended up wanting to get a bowl of soup and ended up getting a career in film.
Wow.
Yeah. So Joe became a big part of the films and starred in most of the big ones. Flesh, Trash, Heat, Flesh of Frankenstein, Blood for Dracula. Again, Joe knew nothing of the art of, you know, films. He never intended to be an actor, but the camera clearly loved him. He's such a beautiful man. Paul Morrissey really took Joe under his wing and became his mentor. When they weren't filming, Joe also worked at the factory sort of as like a security guard and also like helping with errands and whatnot.
So Joe never transitioned.
No, Joe's...
He remained in his masculinity, but yeah. He was a muse.
Yes, 100%. That's an interesting thing because many people think that Joe's real life was a reflection of the characters he played, which were often like drug addicts, hustlers. But Joe is a married man with a kid at the time that he began making films with Warhol and Morrissey. So I've read that Joe identifies as bisexual now, but he really only explored that side of him in, you know, these films and in this Warhol crowd. And because he was pushing so many boundaries on screen, he himself really became like a gay icon and gay ally without, you know, trying. So,
okay, because I guess when you originally said the quote, I was maybe thinking that he was a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
But
he played a lot of characters that were. Okay. And Lou, I believe, had never actually met Joe when he wrote the song. Okay. So he knew him through the films.
Okay, cool. Makes sense.
Yeah. And like, again, he was like a nude model in like, you know, gay magazines and stuff. So that I think people made assumptions. But, you know, being in the Warhol crowd and being in that world really helped him discover this new side of himself. He said, "My introduction to the gay world did two things. One, it saved me from life in prison for murder, which is probably where I would have wound up. How? Because the gay world showed me that you didn't have to beat up every man you saw or hurt people to make a point. It gave me a whole other attitude, a calmer attitude. Two, it taught me to never be homophobic, or even before there was such a term. I think because I grew up in a period, especially later on, when people I looked up to were like my heroes, that's what I liked about that period, that a man could say that he liked both, that he appreciated both the look of a man and the look of a woman without being stereotyped."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, Joe became like a cult icon almost immediately. And by 1971, he was crossing mainstream boundaries. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. On it, he's holding his son. And photographers like Annie Leibovitz and Richard Avedon were shooting him. He was also getting attention from the European filmmakers. And in the 70s, he actually went over and worked with people like Louis Malle and Serge Gainsbourg.
Oh, I'm dying to see a photo of him.
He appeared in Je t'aime moi non plus.
Oh, yeah.
And in the 80s and 90s, he worked with people like Francis Ford Coppola and John Waters. He's in Crybaby. And Steven Soderbergh.
What's the best way to Google him?
Just Joe D'Alessandro.
Okay.
How's Joe's names got into Lou's song? Like I said, he did not know him. Joe said, "I didn't have a relationship with Lou back then. We hadn't met. We never talked. What happened was Lou wanted to have his own career away from the Velvets. Paul suggested he do a song about the people in the factory and the movies. Lou watched..." Yes, that's him.
Oh my God,
isn't
he's
beautiful?
Hot.
Oh God, yes.
Oh, yeah, baby.
So Lou Reed ended up watching Flesh, and he saw some of the people at Max's Kansas City as well. So that's when he sat down, wrote Walk on the Wild Side. But it was the character he wrote about, not about Joe. So Lou's song isn't the only musical connection Joe has. You're going to love this. The Rolling Stones' infamous crotch shot cover on Sticky Fingers. That's Joe's package.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, his torso is featured on the cover of the Smiths' debut album.
Okay, I remember we were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah?
You told me that.
Oh, did I?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
But now, you know, obviously I forget. Mm-hmm. And then, perfect. Love it.
That's never been, like, expressed by the Stones or anything, but Joe says, the Stones covered is from Polaroids that Andy'd taken. I'm not sure Andy even knew which photo he chose, or that it was me. Someone thought it would be a good one for the cover. I know it's me. I've seen myself photographed down there. I know how I photograph. Those were my jeans. The inside is not me, a different person completely. We've had a lot of people from the factory say it's them. It's been some debate. I don't know how it was done, if Andy just shot the crotch or if it was a full length cropped, but I recognize that square on my body. And the Smiths album cover is from the movie Flesh. So they just took an image from it. Apparently, you know, they were fans of Joe.
I'm a fan of Joe too.
And Joe's still alive and kicking. He lives in LA with his third wife. He manages a building there. For those who want more detail about Joe, I suggest checking out Michael Ferguson's book, Joe D'Alessandro, Warhol Superstar, Underground Film Icon, Actor, which was published in 2011.
Cool.
So our next one on the list is the Sugar Plum Fairy. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo. You should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey, Sugar, take a walk on the wild side.
I love it.
So there's quite a lot of Sugar Plum Fairies back then, as the term was used as a euphemism for drug dealers. But in Lou's song, it refers to a man named Joe Campbell. Unfortunately, you can't really find much about Joe online, but I was able to gather a bit of information. He was nicknamed the Sugar Plum Fairy not because he was a dealer, but because he was in an Andy Warhol film in 1965 called My Hustler, and that was his character's name. So Joe was born in 1936. In 1955, he was 19 years old, and he met a young Harvey Milk, and they began dating. So they were together for 7 years. They lived in New York and Dallas, Texas for a short while. Campbell would be Harvey Milk's longest relationship. After they split, for those who don't know who Harvey Milk is, Harvey Milk went into politics. He became the first openly gay man in California to hold elective office. Unfortunately, Milk was assassinated in 1978. And if you haven't seen it, Gus Van Sant made a fantastic film all about Harvey Milk called Milk, and Sean Penn plays the lead.
I have seen it.
Yeah. So while Harvey went west, Campbell stayed in New York. He met Andy Warhol, became one of the factory regulars. My Hustler was the only Warhol production that Campbell would be a part of, and he was definitely considered like a minor role in the Warhol crowd or stars as it goes. But, you know, he made enough of an impression for Lou to include him. Campbell is most well known for his relationship with Harvey. And in the late 60s, he also dated a man named Oliver Billy Sybil. He was a decorated Marine and Vietnam vet. And in 1975, there was this woman named Sarah Jane Moore. And she actually attempted to shoot President Ford, and Sipple happened to be standing next to her, and when he realized what was happening, he grabbed her arm and prevented her from assassinating him. So it's sort of the men that he dated that became famous, and there's not much on Campbell himself, but he eventually left New York City. He headed to California as well. In 1993, he donated a lot of the letters that Harvey had written him to the Gay and Lesbian Historical Society in San Francisco. And Campbell ended up finding love with a man named Stanley Jensen, and they were together for 29 years until Joe Campbell passed away in 2005.
Wow.
Yeah. So our last one, and one of the most fabulous ones, is Jackie Curtis. So Jackie is just speeding away. She thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that bash. She said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side.
I can't wait to play the song afterwards. And you just have such a different, I don't know.
Right? It's yeah. So cool to like know about these people.
Oh, what a great idea. You're so amazing. Okay, let's hear it.
So I'm going to call Jackie he in this. Because I watched a fabulous documentary called Superstar in a House Dress, which is all about Jackie, and I highly recommend it. And all of Jackie's friends and peers refer to him as he. So I'm assuming that's what he wanted and what he preferred. When asked about his sexuality once, Jackie said, I'm not a boy, not a girl, not a faggot, not a drag queen, not a transsexual. I'm just me, Jackie. So Jackie was born John Curtis Holder Jr.
May I ask how Jackie is spelt?
J-A-C-K-I-E.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it could have, you know, it could have been like J-A-C-Q-U-I yeah. or, you know, it's...
K-I-E.
Cool.
And Jackie was born February 19th, 1947 in New York City. He had one sibling, a half-brother named Timothy, who ended up becoming an openly gay Episcopal priest?
Episcopalian
priest?
Say Episcopalian priest five times fast. Just kept
not even trying. So Jackie was brought up in the Lower East Side. That's my dream right there. And was mostly raised by his maternal grandmother, who I love. I wish I got to know this woman. Listen to her. She had a huge impact on Jackie's life. Her grandmother was a well-known East Village character named Slugger Ann. Okay. And Slugger Ann had a bar on 12th and 2nd near St. Mark's Church that was also called Slugger Ann's, obviously. And that operated from the 50s until her death in the 1980s. And fun fact, Candy Darling actually worked there as a barmaid for a bit. I think all of them probably did. So Slugger Ann is described as this Mae West kind of character. And if you're curious about where she got her nickname, it was while she was working as a taxi dancer. If a man tried to grope her, she would slug them. And that's how she became Slugger Ann. So yeah, kind of in love with Jackie's grandmother. And it makes so much sense when you see Jackie and you hear what she talks about and just her whole presence. Like, I imagine Slugger Ann must have been a huge influence. So Jackie grew up in and around that bar, observing and no doubt collecting material for his later work. Jackie sometimes tended bar there, and he would go back and forth from wearing jeans and a t-shirt and other times a dress, depending on his mood. While it wasn't a gay bar, everyone knew that Jackie was Slugger Ann's grandson, and if they had a problem with Jackie, then they had a problem with Slugger Ann, and she was not going to have that. So that was a great place for Jackie to, you know, grow and explore and become who he would become. By the time he was 17, he was working in a theater, and he began to write his own plays. Jackie's considered a genius among his peers. He's a writer, an actor, a singer, a poet, a comedian... Warhol once said, Jackie Curtis is not a drag queen. Jackie is an artist, a pioneer without a frontier. So Curtis performed both as a woman and as a man throughout his career. He was also a drag queen who broke the mold. His goal wasn't to look as authentically female as possible, like Candy. Jackie was a big, you know, man, and he knew he wasn't exactly going to pass as female, so he went for the more camp look. You know, he didn't wear false boobs. He didn't try to look feminine. He tried to look fun and just, you know, find his own thing. So there was a theater group called Playhouse of the Ridiculous and another place called La Mama, and it's there in these groups that Jackie really blossomed and began putting on his plays, which, while they may have, you know, confused some people, he always had a packed house. I wish I could go back in time and hang out in these theater groups. Jackie was the star of his plays, but there were so many incredible other artists that Jackie was working alongside. Like I mentioned, Robert De Niro got a start there. He's working with Candy and Holly Woodlawn and Patti Smith and Penny Arcade and Harvey Fierstein and, you know, Lily Tomlin. Like, there's just so many. Yeah. Jane County, just so many. If you actually go on YouTube, you can find some clips from Jackie Curtis's play Femme Fatale, and you can see a bunch of those people in it. So check that out. I mentioned previously while talking about Candy that they met Warhol because Jackie invited him to his play. They actually first met Warhol in Greenwich Village. He had to give the invite first, of course. They asked for his autograph, invited him to see the play. Remember, Glamour, Glory, and Gold. And Warhol remembers the meeting like this. Walking just ahead of us was a boy, about 19 or 20, with wispy beetle bangs. And next to him was a tall, sensational blonde drag queen in very high heels and a sundress that she had made sure she had one strap falling onto her arm. Warhol attended the play and said, "For the first time, I wasn't bored." And this led, again, to both of them entering the factory world and getting parts in, you know, the 1968 film Flesh. And then that led to Woman in Revolt. Jackie continued to write his own plays. I think he wrote a total of about 10. And he was also an amazing poet. And he has a piece called B-Girls, which was basically about Slugger Ann's and, like, all the women he would see there. And it's really amazing. It's a really great piece. So Jackie went back and forth from being Jackie the woman to Jackie the man. And the line in the song about wanting to be James Dean, that was real. Jackie had a love and fascination for James Dean and dreamt of playing James on stage. And for a period of time in the 70s, people talk now about how he was almost doing like male drag because he made himself into James Dean. Like, he became that persona for a while. Oh,
fascinating.
Yeah. Unfortunately, just like so many other incredible artists of the time, Jackie struggled with addiction and alcoholism. Judging by the documentary I watched, he probably suffered from depression and possibly bipolar even, though that could have been like the drugs, you know, leading to mood swings. You know, if you're doing heroin and speed and booze and, you know, up or down or just mixing them all the time, you're going to have some highs and lows.
Oh yeah, we were on vacation, like we said, in Nova Scotia, and after 3 days of drinking, and not even that much, but it was 3 days of drinking alcohol, I woke up the fourth morning crying.
Yeah, yeah. So Jackie had some overdoses before, but unfortunately on May 15th, 1985, he overdosed and that time passed away. He was only 38 years old. So, as I mentioned, there's a great documentary, Superstar in a Dress, all about Jackie. They interviewed some of Jackie's closest friends. Of course, like Holly Woodlawn's in it, Penny Arcade's in it, Harvey Fierstein's in it. They share great stories. A lovely, lovely tribute. I highly recommend everyone go watch it. And yeah, that's basically their stories. They were all so incredibly talented and definitely pioneers and all deserve to continually have their story told. And I hope listeners will, you know, Google all of these people, watch the documentaries on them, watch the Warhol films they were in, especially Women in Revolt, since it's Jackie, Holly, and Candy all together. And it's just, it's fun to watch these women playing these, like, women libbers, and it's actually like a fun film. And another good book to check out would be Downtown Pop Underground. And there are some other films. Mary Harron made a film in the 90s called I Shot Andy Warhol. That's about Valerie Solanas, the woman who shot Andy. But Valerie was friends with Jackie and Candy and their characters in the film. And Stephen Dorff actually plays Candy. And he's so fantastic. He really has her down. And Jamie Harold is Jackie Curtis. And yeah, there's plenty of material out there, plenty of books, plenty of documentaries. I hope people check them out. And I hope everyone learned a little bit more about that song and these fascinating people who, you know, we have to thank for breaking boundaries and pushing the limits and just being who they are. And, you know, I'm so thankful that they were.
That was awesome. Yeah. That was so fascinating, so interesting. A song that you've heard a thousand times in your life, and then it really comes to life again.
Yeah.
Because you get to uncover and discover the muse in the song.
Yeah.
It's been, I love it when you do your compilations. I don't know if I've ever done one, but every time you do one, they're so fantastic. And I really enjoyed that. So thank you for your research and your hard work and the way you presented it.
Thank you.
Beautifully done.
Amazing. And yeah, thanks to all our listeners. And if you want to get more of us, become a patron.
Yeah.
On our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And keep checking out all the other amazing podcasts on Pantheon Network.
That's right.
Yeah.
Follow us on Instagram at Muses Podcast, Twitter at Shanti and Links. And if you haven't yet, and you're one of those beautiful people that send us DMs saying, I love your show. Or if you're a new listener or a past listener and you haven't yet done it, we would really appreciate it. Actually, you know what's a good idea is somebody recently in a podcast that I was listening to links up iTunes reviews, like the link, in the show notes.
Oh, nice.
So instead of going into the iTunes category and doing this and that and finding it, maybe we'll just try and include that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Click on it and then leave us a rating and review, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah. And I hope you had fun taking a walk on the wild side.
Doot, 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 doot.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.